Welcome back to the Lakers Fast Break. My name is Jamie Sweet. I'm here with fellow Lakerholic, Laker Tom. Before we get started, like and subscribe. Come on by the blog at Lakerholics.com. And Tom and I will chat you out a little bit. Let's see if we can make this look a little better, actually. Hold on a sec. Tom, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing fine, Jamie. Always good to have a win the night before.
That's right.
In the role, and like I told you before the game, the Lakers ranked number one in defense the last two games.
I'm not sure that that's a. it's a pretty small.
You don't want to take that to the bank yet?
I'm not taking that one to the bank yet. It's a pretty small sample size, all things considered. But you know what? Like I said, it's trending in the right direction.
It's going in the right direction. So we got to be grateful for that. You know, that's.
Yeah.
But I did think that there was some really – the thing that's really impressed me is how good Dinwiddie is on defense. I was really not aware that he was that good a defensive player.
Agreed. He's, you know
– he's by far – I mean, forget – without having Vando,
yeah,
he has really turned into a valuable player for us.
I mean, it definitely makes me feel like the bench is a little bit more of a strength – even with all the injuries,
kind of fights Darwin's biases too. This could help.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there was, I'm sure you read it. There was an article about the state of the Lakers by none other than Javon Buha during the week. I think it dropped like 2 days ago, yesterday, maybe even.
Right.
Where they, you know, did a little bit of a deep dive on the numbers when it comes to Taurean Prince's on the court, off the court.
Yeah.
And listen, some of that, the problem
and not being, necessarily to Taurean's detriment, it's just that
no,
he's just been overused in the wrong role.
He's been overused and over expected of, I believe.
Right.
You know, if you drive a Pinto and your dream is to be a stock car drag racer, well, let me tell
you, probably you should not. Should not trade for anybody or sign anybody who has previously played for Darvin Ham
or the Miami Heat. That's
those yeah, the or the Miami Heat. Well, that's a separate issue, but yeah, we
I'm sure we could
do a five things on that one, Jamie.
The only player that's done well is LeBron.
Yeah,
well, no, that's not true. Lamar Odom had a nice career as a Laker. He may never have played the role that he played in Miami as a Laker. But I always thought that he was sort of the perfect guy to have around Kobe because he was such a willing playmaker, such a willing mover of the ball.
Yeah, that's true. But it's so nice to have a guy coming off of Ham's bench who really can play and, you know, and who is a better defender and a better offensive player than most of the guys on the bench.
Yeah, I mean, well, I don't know about that. I mean, it depends on who's coming off the bench, kind of. I mean, in this iteration of the Lakers, yes, having a guy like Dinwiddie fill the role that we were hoping Gabe Vincent would fill this season and just hasn't been able to do so for a number of reasons.
And I don't think Gabe's going to get a chance because of Spencer.
I agree. I totally agree. So, you know.
It's so boring when you agree with me all the time, Jamie. Come on, man.
No, but I mean, I don't know that even if you were to make it back to the floor, like I know.
Why take the chance?
It's
a break glass in case of emergency type of situation now.
I mean, when it came to Kendrick Nunn, it was this bone bruise that would not heal, right? Which basically amounted to a season ending or a career ending in his case, I believe.
I think it's a contagious one. He passes it on to the next guy for another year, you know?
Well, that's the thing. They're both from Miami, right? So it's the old Miami guys with bad knees. You got to just steer clear from now on, Rob. All right, just steer clear. Find
another. This morning, I turned on Sirius Radio, and who's on but Kendrick Nunn talking about how he's been playing overseas, and you know he's hoping for a shot back in the NBA.
Oh, I'm sure he is, but I mean you're going to have to grind like Isaiah Thomas is grinding. I mean, here's an example. There's a great example. There's a perfect example of a guy who everybody counted out. Everybody was like, oh, this dude's toast. You know, that hip impingement, whatever that issue was that robbed him of his Brinks truck moment, you know, because that's basically what happened, right?
That's when you don't want to be playing for the Boston Celtics, man.
Well, I mean, listen, I don't know that any team would have backed up the Brinks truck for him in that case, in that event. But you just always feel for those guys who, and that's why I was kind of – I just feel for guys. I mean, as a pro athlete,
Boogie getting screwed out of that big contract and
all of it, right?
Like, all those types of situations are heartbreaking.
Yeah, because they have such a small window.
Because the guy really deserved it. He's a player who, before he got injured, was really something special.
I agree.
Those are the guys that you always root for. There's another universe where they're superstars, man.
Well, and like, you know, to Cousins' own, you know, detriment, he was maybe not the best, most easily accessible player once he got to role player status, which I'm sure he didn't believe in his mind he was ready for. Yeah. And that's the
2 or 3 years after the physical part of the game.
Well, but that's the story. That's the caution. That's the inspiring part, in my opinion, about the Isaiah Thomas story, right? Yeah. It's like, whether he wanted to accept it or not, isn't the point. He did, and he pushed through, and he persevered. I don't know if you've read any of the articles about him lately that have dropped on various. So,
yeah,
but I mean, he's not doing this thinking like, and now I'm gonna. This is my way back. He's right. Like, I just want to contribute. Yeah. Whatever you need me to do, I will do. You want me to be somebody in practice? I'll be somebody in practice. You want me to just take a young guy off to the side and say, slow down. Whatever you want me to do, I'll do it. That's the mentality you need once your athleticism leaves you. Whatever your
and it's hard for the mental part of it to catch up to the physical part of it.
I can't imagine what it would be like to have, you know, something like my imagination taken away from me out of nowhere. You know what I mean? Like, oh, that's it. You don't imagine things anymore.
Well, these guys play basketball.
Whatever. I've never experienced my livelihood being threatened because something that I'd counted on for my entire life suddenly just wasn't there.
Right.
It wasn't. I could think about it. I remember it, but it doesn't work. Nothing works the same. And now I've got to figure out a new way of making this work. And so it's hard.
I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're a superstar or just a guy who goes down to the gym every Saturday, like I did for most of my life.
Right.
Man, it is hard to make that adjustment. I can remember the first time when I couldn't fake people out and get by them. Fell down. I was like 55 years old, and I took my son out to the court. I won the game at the end with a bank shot, a 3-point bank shot that was just totally luck and totally the only thing I could even throw up at that point in the game.
Yeah.
And you get to a point, you know, then all of a sudden the injuries start to happen, you know, and you can't even make a free throw. You can't get it up to the free throw ball.
Well,
so you have a shoulder. You have a shoulder replacement, you know, and you go through all these things, and
right,
yeah, man, you know. Now I'm just trying not to walk like Joe Biden. You know, end up walking like Joe Biden.
You know what? Joe can walk though, so it's not.
you can walk, but man,
that's right. Let's not knock it.
It's eggshells, though. It's eggshells, man.
Oh, sure. I mean, you watch both what will be both presidential candidates, and you think like, okay, make it across the gangway. You made it across it. Okay, make it down the steps. There's only five.
Really?
You
got this. Okay, do not put stairs in front of these guys.
Yeah, no.
Or places to trip or anything like that. You know, that's
more moving sidewalks. Pretty soon we'll see moving sidewalks and lifts in the White House. Anyway, let's not get into politics. Although I know you and I generally see, I'm pretty sure, fairly eye to eye.
Yeah, I will. I'm sure we do.
But, I mean, we're from California, folks. So, you know, it's hard not to be, you know, swinging a little bit to the left if you get my drift. And if you don't swing a little bit to the left, well, that's your prerogative. Yeah. I just hope you do real research and not YouTube. What's his truth? Social media network, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Research. Anyway, moving on briskly. Like and subscribe, just for Gerald's sake.
Last night's game was. Man, we were so sloppy with the ball.
Well, it looked like we'd had 3 days off, but not
enough. Well, it also looked, you know, I was also impressed with, man, I'd love to have Nick Nurse as our coach. They came out and played great defense. They played great defense against us.
Yeah, I think you're going to have to, I think your best case scenario is Coach Bud, unfortunately, after Ham. I think that's the top name. I don't see them giving enough. If Ham doesn't work out this summer, if they come out of the playoffs, whatever happens, and front office is like, we really appreciate what you did, but we just don't see this working going forward. It just doesn't work. It's not working. they're not going to do another rookie head coach. So that knocks.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that, unless it was something unreally unusual like Rondo or somebody like that.
I don't even think they'd go Rondo. Not because what are you going to do? Ask LeBron? Like, you can't run a team like that. You just can't run.
Well,
a team like
that. The difference. No, there's what you're saying is so logical in the sense that if you get somebody like Budenholzer, you know, the guy is an organized coach who's got very, you know, he's got a proven record, you know.
He's one of the few coaches.
And the other side about it is that it's interesting in retrospect to look back at the decision made by Pelinka to back off of allowing the coach to make his own decisions with respect to who he's going to put on the court.
Uh-huh.
And Jamie?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. I just sort of lost everybody here and I can't see the screen at all. Oh, hang on there.
I think we're good.
Yeah, wait a second.
You've frozen on your and my end, but I can hear you. Anyway. There you go. Oh, man.
No, what happened was the sorry. What were we talking about?
Rondo and the
Rondo, right.
And it would actually be Bud.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate to say it, right? Like, there's too many things that make sense. He's coached a LeBron-like player in Giannis. It opens up, however unlikely, a path for Giannis to become a Laker, which nobody's going to be pissed about that.
Yep.
And I'm not saying that's a guarantee, but all of that would start to come out and be a part of the, you know, be a part of it all. So
yeah. I hope that something like that happens, you know, but you get into this battle where I do want the team to do well. And if the team does well, they're probably not going to fire him.
But what's well? What's well?
It's well, make the conference finals again. I think that would be quite an accomplishment.
That is a tall task, in my opinion, right now. That is a tall, tall task.
But I don't think it's an impossible task because
no, of course not. No, you could see if there's a series where AD and LeBron play like AD and LeBron are supposed to play, and Rui and D'Lo average an efficient 20 points a game, and Austin Reeves plays an Austin Reeves game, that's a tough series for any opponent, Denver included.
And there's some teams that we match up very well against that don't want to play us.
Right, but I mean,
it's like other teams, like we don't match up well against the Kings and the Nuggets, you know.
No, but we're going to go through at least one of those teams to get to where we're going, if not potentially both. There is an unfortunate pathway.
But we can beat anybody out there, I think, in the West. I do think also too that I don't think the Nuggets are 8-0 better than we are. You know, I think that
What leads you to this incredible optimism, Tom?
Well, because we're close in every game until the end, you know, and their players have outperformed, you know, so it's just the law of averages, you know, that's going to balance out some, you know, and I also think too that LeBron, it's really interesting the way that the LeBron's defense, for example, if he really plays well,
he
becomes a different factor on defense because he can still stop guys.
He can.
He still is, you know. And when he's engaged, man, the rest of the team really does get engaged. It's when he takes off that it's really tough because
really bad.
Well, just letting guys fire away from three is just.
Or just not rotating over to the guy who's closing to dunk the ball in the
But you know, hey, listen, he's 39 years old, and there's some days he probably
that's the horse the cart's attached to, and he's gonna pull it as far as it goes. Yeah. So that's just the reality, right? There's no getting away from that. And however long this lasts, this year, next year, 20 years, who knows, right?
Oh, like you know. It's hard to say there'll never be another LeBron, but I don't think there ever will be.
It's hard to imagine one. I feel like you look at the body type and you think, okay, maybe the closest player in the league right now is honestly Rui Hachimura, followed by Zion.
Zion would be if he could control it. Yeah.
Yeah, but nobody's, I mean, Zion's already missed so many games early in his career. He's going to have a hard time getting the putting the numbers up.
Yeah, he's never going to last. It's just.
No, he's just too big. He's just too big.
And he doesn't have the discipline to.
No, he's a little bit like Shaq.
His career the way that LeBron has managed his career.
No, he's like Shaq the first 7 years of his career.
Yeah. Yeah. imagine Shaq or Zion with LeBron's mindset.
Oh. Forget about it.
Yeah.
Forget about it.
Yeah.
Because both those guys, I feel like for the first six, seven years of their career, really got by largely on talent.
Yeah. Yep.
And it wasn't until Shaq started, you know, really getting panned for not being a player who could do it all, couldn't take his team all the way, that I felt like he put together that conditioning season that led to his MVP year where he slimmed down. Yep. He took the weight off of his lower core and he just moved better across the board, both ends. And he was motivated. And he was in his prime. And
quickness and weight are so tightly related, man.
Well,
it's just incredible. You watch guys like LeBron and the quickness that he still has with that weight.
That's the issue with LeBron.
He's got to weigh 280. 270?
I think he's under 280. I'll bet he's like 265, 270. There's the chats. Hey, there's Gary. All right. Yeah, there's some folks. Hey, everybody. Gary, come on. Hold on a second. Lakers won't even make the playoffs. Whatever. Now, I will say this. Since our talk last week, Houston has continued to not lose. Golden State has lost a couple of times.
Yeah.
And that is a much closer race than I think everybody in the Bay Area is comfortable with right now. Because
the Warriors are not going to be able to beat the Lakers. So
they're not going to be able to get out of the play-in. They're not going to get out of the play-in if the way they're playing.
Yeah, they're the number 10 team, period.
I mean,
although they could even get taken over by Houston.
This is what I'm saying. If they keep playing 500 ball the rest of the way, Looks like they're going to play 700-800 ball, and they will pass them.
Yeah,
and that will
hard for us to get up to the 7-8 thing, I think.
It's like Sacramento got up to play us, and then they've lost 2 out of 3. So it's still anybody's ball game up until 7. I don't know that we'll get to 7. I think we can get to 8 if Sacramento kind of flounders. Dallas was floundering.
Well, the problem is you got 3 teams with us 29 losses, you know. And
no, I know. It's going to be tough. And we don't own the tiebreakers. 32
losses, you know.
We don't own the tiebreakers against the teams in front of us, unfortunately, is the other issue.
Yeah. So and frankly, I don't think the Lakers really – I don't think that they're going to bust their butts. And, you know, it's like we talked about last time. I think we're both pretty much in agreement that – let's stay healthy. Let's figure out our little problems. Let's integrate the guys that are coming back. Yeah. Let's see what Vando can do. Can he actually get back and then take it light and easy on LeBron and AD. Let's not get them injured. Let's go in. Let's get healthy because we aren't going to get that week off that other teams do. We're going to have to play 2 games probably.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so let's just be ready to win those 2 games and move into the playoffs. And somebody's going to be scared shitless of playing us in the 7 or 8 slot. That's for sure.
Yeah. No. And the play.
They're going to be, this is 1, 2, and 3 teams are going to be looking really hard at who they're going to be matching up with in the playoffs.
It would be ideal if we could get the 7th seed, play 1 play-in game, that's within reach.
1 play-in game and then play the Thunder in the first round.
And if we could get 7 in the 7-8 seed, that's in the 1 play-in game territory.
Yep.
In my opinion, that's the only goal left. There's no getting to 6. Get
no,
6.
That's stupid to try to get to 6.
6 is right out. You want home court advantage.
Trying to get to 6 is like trying to win the in-season tournament.
Well, we won the in-season.
You don't win anything if you do it. All you do is lessen your odds of going any further.
No, I disagree with that completely. It gives LeBron a full week off to get treatment on his ankle, and I think that would be ideal.
Okay.
There's nothing better than rest for LeBron right now. There's absolutely nothing better than rest. There's no amount of practice. There's no amount of film sessions.
I agree 100% on that.
That's all for the rest of the team.
But I also don't think that they're going to bust their butt trying to do that. But if you can, opportunity knocks, they might answer.
Listen, if we win out the rest of the season and like Phoenix, Dallas, Sacramento all kind of tumble a little bit, it is mathematically possible. Do I think it's realistic? I don't.
This is Raphael from NBADraftJunkies.com, and you are listening to the Lakers Fast Break.
Check out what's been going on with the Pop Culture Cosmo Show and the PCC Multiverse.
My last movie that I saw in the theaters was The Last Skywalker. I know, condolences to me.
Wow, man. Right. I just had talked about that and I completely forgot that I saw that movie.
Yes.
It doesn't speak great things about it, I suppose.
That's the Pop Culture Cosmo Show.
And the PCC Multiverse.
Catch our shows on Worldwide Radio 7 days a week and wherever you get your podcasts.
The most realistic scenario I see happening right now is that Golden State continues to play 500 ball and Houston continues to play 700-800 ball. And if that's the case, then it's going to be a much tougher series, frankly, for the Lakers at 9-10, or it gets a lot tougher. Because Houston will be on a heater. They'll have been playing really, really well to close out the season, which is what you don't want to have happen. You'd rather have...
And Golden State, we really have Golden State's number, and they don't shoot well at Staples. And, you know, there's all sorts of little factors in there.
I mean, I don't like any one-game scenario with Steph Curry involved, frankly. I don't care where he is. Everybody will be like, oh, he shoots terrible at crypto. Don't jinx it. Stop it. Right. Just stop talking about
that. That again is the worry of the play-in tournament. It's the fact that you got to win two games or you got to win one game, and there's no offset. You lose, you're out. You know, that's it. You know, you're end of run. It's, you know, Cancun, baby.
1, 2, 3, Cancun. Gary, you are a ray of sunshine today, and a rainbow with a unicorn on top of it. Although I will say I tend to agree, I do not think that Vando will be returning this season. I mean,
I actually think he's going to return this season. I do believe he will.
You think that he would both A, be fit enough to play major minutes, be good enough to have a positive impact in the playoffs, and they'd let him play? I mean, let's look at the Lonnie Walker lesson, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Lonnie Walker was playing great. Hurt his ankle. It took a drastic turn of events in the Golden State series for them to even consider putting him on the floor. And when they finally did, he had a skill set that was applicable to that series. He was a much better three-point shooter than Jared Vanderbilt has proven himself to be over the course of his career. And he got, you know, he had an impact on the game. Now, that ended quickly once we got to Denver. And then,
but that was a different situation, because we have a specific need that really at this point in time, Vando's really the only one who can do it, unless we actually find that Dinwiddie can do it. I actually think that, you know, you read these rumors that the reason we didn't make a deal at the trade deadline was because the front office and ownership decided that it was a hopeless case to be able to win this year. And that was primarily because they felt Vanderbilt was out for the year.
Yeah.
And now, funny, after that recent report from CBS Sports that all three of them were destined never to come back.
Sure.
There seems to be a change, and it seems to be, at least, and a lot of it is driven by Buha, that the sense that the players get is that Vando will return, but Gabe won't. And mostly because they just are worried about Gabe. They don't want to put the pressure on him, having not played at all the entire year. And Spencer's doing really well, so why take his minutes away for a risky situation? But everybody seems to be pretty confident now that there's a good chance that Vanderbilt will play. And that has to be based upon what they're seeing from him in practice and on the court, even though he's not cleared for contact practice or anything.
Yeah, so that's just sort of, I think he's basically doing rehab work still. He's not doing drills. He's not doing non-contact court work.
And he's doing one-hit shots and stretches to get that foot in shape and so forth.
And frankly,
feet are a funny thing. Feet, those foot injuries are just sprains and.
Albert Pujols was never the same once his plantar fascia went, and that was it. That was the end of all that money the Angels spent.
Oh, Bill Walton, you go down the line.
Down the line of guys. So I would rather, again, I would honestly, his big money deal kicks in after the summer or this summer. So I would take the same approach with all three of them, which is if you're going to come back this season, it's going to be in such a limited role. Why not just try to take time?
Well, I do agree with you to that extent, Jamie, that I think that he has to really be really ready to play. If he's really ready to play, he'll play. If there's any question about whether he's ready to play, then he shouldn't play.
Yeah, but the other thing, listen, you know what a huge Vando fan I am. I'm Vando fan number one on the blog, everywhere. I've been extolling his virtues for a very long time. His detractors, I think, don't quite understand the nuances of basketball, especially on the defensive end of the court.
It also depends. He's an impact player and a difference maker on defense when playing that way. But also, there was a good part of the season last year where he wasn't playing that way.
No, well, so
earlier this season, after the injury and the start and so forth, he hasn't been playing that way. But that 2 or 3 weeks that he was before he got injured, that was the Vando that we saw in the stretch run last year.
That's the Vando I believe he can be, and I think he can become an even better scorer and probably even a better three-point corner three maker. If he can make
what intrigues me about it is, you notice look at what's happened with Rui, and what the change of Rui in this lineup has done is that teams can't match up. I mean, now teams, let's say the Nuggets can match up, but most teams can't match up, and they end up with a smaller guy on Rui. So the thing I like about Vando coming in and replacing Reeves and playing the two is then you've got two guys like that whose offense is helped dramatically by playing against a smaller defender. And Rui on the boards and Rui posting guys up, they just don't know how to handle him. And Vando doesn't have those offensive skills that Rui does.
No, he's a cutter.
But as a rebounder, as a rebounder on the offensive glass and so forth, he'll get his 10 points per game that he has to have as a starter from that and from cutting and from, doing those types of things, which are important for the flow of the team.
If he can make.
But I love the idea of having Rui and Jarrett on the floor together.
I think that would be something you would see.
Pardon?
I think that would be something you would see if he was healthy.
Yeah, I mean, because here's the thing. If you're going to play a 6'10" guy at shooting guard, he can play shooting guard because on offense, it's positionless.
I know.
Offensively, he's totally positionless. In defense, he's got to be able to guard that position that he plays. He's got to guard a shooting guard, and that's who you want him to guard.
It depends on the player, but or the team, I suppose. But I mean, listen, that way, the real point of the matter is he's not playing right now, and so this is all for next season. At this point, I mean, I would love it if he came back. No.
I think it's 60-40 now.
I'm still like 80-20.
You're probably 80-20, 20-80.
Yeah. And I'll tell you why. Because it took him about a month to get ramped up to the player that we saw who was making an impact on both sides of the floor.
Right.
He was taking 2 or 3 corner threes a game. He was taking those shots. That's all you need the guy to do. Take the shot, man. Just work, hit that corner three, cut inside when the defender turns his head. Rebound the ball, and then do everything you do on defense. If you do those three things on offense,
well, the key thing is,
you're going to justify the contract. If he does those three things on offense, he's going to justify the contract.
Well, if he frankly can justify the contract, if he can just do what he does on defense and just slowly improve a little bit in offense.
Yeah.
At the worst point in time when we got into the playoffs, he had become afraid to attack the rim and afraid to take the shot. And as a result, then he was just he was what Cam Reddish has suddenly become since he can't seem to have an impact on defense anymore.
I mean, he's that guy, I think, this might be his last season. I think he has a player option, so he'll probably be a Laker again next season.
Well, that's interesting. You know, there are a lot of guys with player options who might take those options.
On the Lakers? Yeah.
Hayes? Because...
Maybe not Hayes.
Hayes
is 50-50.
I think Hayes wants to stay with the Lakers.
He might. We gave him his best shots to date, so that,
you know, and he's. I would like to see Hayes back next year.
I would too. Yeah. So Tom, there's some stuff going on in the chat that I think will intrigue you because as many people know, you love a good trade. There is evidently if you can believe this, there's another rumor that Kyrie's coming to the Lakers this summer.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think how the Mavs do will could determine that.
He's not a free agent. No. Let's put that. So we can't sign him. So that's thing number one. We could only get Kyrie if we trade for him. Forget what Kyrie's making. I think it's like 28 mil, 29. Maybe it kicks in a little higher than that next season. I can't remember exactly what his contract is or how it breaks down.
It's low 30s.
It's going to be like 28 to 32, somewhere in there, I feel like.
Which is a lot better than 40.
Oh, yeah. But the only way we could get him, and everybody's like, there's no way the Lakers could get him. And actually, that's completely and wholly false.
Yeah, with three draft picks and three trades. Yeah. Swaps, they could get him.
You could get Kyrie Irving for if D'Lo opts in or doesn't opt in and an extension with his next team, which is wholly within the rules and would not penalize the Lakers. You could easily pair D'Lo and Rui Hachimura with three first-round draft picks and trade for Kyrie Irving. Now, does anybody think that's a good idea? That's a different debate. But it is financially and cap-wise very possible, especially if some of these guys on vet minimum deals opt into their contracts, because those count. Those would be nice little filler that don't count against the cap as much. So if the Lakers really
I wouldn't mind having Christian Wood and Jackson Hayes and Spencer Dinwiddie back.
No, I wouldn't.
He doesn't have an option, but I'd love to re-sign him.
No, but we could sign him using the MLE this summer. Yeah. Which could happen, depending on how Gabe Vincent responds to whatever he's going through.
Yep.
I would not be surprised if it does happen. And if they take out, I was a little bit surprised the Lakers didn't pursue the injury hardship exemption with Gabe Vincent, which makes me think that medically it's like a murky situation, because the way that works is the player has to be medically cleared for not being able to play at all. There's no chance medically
that he's done. That's the problem.
Well, listen, you're going to have to take a physical on your next team. There's no getting away from it. You're not going to stealth trade somebody and be like, oh, look, he's running and jumping. His knee's fine. As soon as they take a knee, an MRI, and see he's got no cartilage or whatever the issue is, they're going to avoid the trade. So that there's no sneaking him onto another team. I know you've got these dream scenarios where Gabe Vincent is cap filler.
I think Gabe Vincent will be traded this summer.
No.
He will be.
No, he will not be Tom, how is it?
Sure, he will be.
Then you're going to pay to do it, right? Then you're going to pay a draft pick to do it.
No, because you're trading draft picks, basically. Any trades that the Lakers do this summer, the key components, unless it's Austin Reeves, the key components are going to be draft picks. And so that's filler for draft picks trades. It doesn't matter. They don't care. He's going to got 2 years left. It'll be fine. He's not a dead piece of weight. He's not going to add to the trade, but he's a piece that you can move. And the Lakers are going to move those pieces before they're going to move pieces like Hachimura and Vanderbilt and
okay. So let's play a quick game. You're the GM of the Charlotte Hornets.
Okay.
Lakers say, hey, you trade me. I forget his name, Miles McBride or whoever it was, the guy who's
the domestic violence.
You trade us this guy for Gabe Vincent. You're not going to do it.
Well, we trade Gabe Vincent and a first round draft pick for him.
But that's what I'm saying. You're going to have to pay to trade him. You're not trading.
You're looking at it the wrong way. What we're doing is No, what we're doing is we're making a trade of a draft pick.
You could trade
that player, and we have to match salary, so we match any salary we want.
Absolutely wrong. That is not what I'm saying at all. You could trade Hachimura straight up, no draft picks, for a bevy of players in the league. There are no players of impact that you could trade for Gabe Vincent for without attaching a draft asset. It will not happen.
Okay, I'll agree with this, that you're not, that Gabe Vincent alone is not going to bring back another player that you want.
You won't even be able to
include him in a... But the Lakers aren't looking to trade players. We're looking to trade draft picks, and we need filler salary, and Gabe filler salary.
I understand that's what the Lakers want to do, but no GM wants to do that. They want a player too.
The only reason that GM is going to trade for... We're just both saying the same thing in a different way.
I guess.
Vincent, basically, you're saying Vincent has to have something attached to him, and I'm saying, yeah, Vincent basically is filler only. He's got to be in a trade it doesn't matter. They just need salaries to match.
And that will take something like a disgruntled player begging to get off the team that they're on. And it has to be one that, cool, bro. You can become my Padawan.
Well, no, it has to be somebody who wants that draft pick for whatever reason. And then you become into the whole issue of a post-LeBron James unprotected draft pick. What's that word?
This joke was made many times last week. We need new jokes, chat, new jokes. That I'm only posting the one. That's it. No more Weekend at Bernie's jokes. I'm not even doing this even. We're not doing this stuff. So it's an old joke. We ran through like three of those, four of those last week. They were like, I give them C+ level jokes. They weren't even that funny. Yes, my two favorite Laker Hawks. These are okay. all right, hold on. Okay, first off, Kurt Affair, nice to see you back. Cool, bro. Your first lesson as a I don't know, whatever you want to call me. Is don't listen to other people. Don't care what other people say. Believe in yourself. If you believe in yourself, if you take the time to work on yourself, everything else will be fine. Somebody's like, oh, you're not this enough or that not enough. If you don't want to be those things, don't. Be you. Be you, everybody, and be content. That is my lesson to you all. Anyway, moving on. So let's look at the final. What do we got? 10 games left? 11 games left?
I thought we had 12 left.
I think we had 12 left last night.
11 left, six at home and five on the road or something like that?
Something like that. Well, we still have a six-game road trip coming up. So that's basically going to make or break our seeding, I feel like. Because after that, you have four more home games sprinkled around, a couple more road games. And we end the season on the road in New Orleans. In a game that actually could have quite a lot of weight. Well, for both franchises, because the Pelicans might be in a position to move up a little bit depending on how things work with Phoenix. Phoenix is just can't sustain any momentum. All the bottom six teams cannot sustain any momentum. That's been the story of this Western Conference playoff battle. Is the first six team, well, really the first five teams, have all been pretty solidly entrenched in the top six for the entirety of the season. Clippers fell out a little bit, then kind of righted the ship and have been rolling since then, unfortunately for Laker fans and fortunately for Clipper fans. If there are any here, and I don't know what you're doing here. this is not the chat for you. We don't really think very highly of the Clippers here. And we do. Kurt has a question for us both. How do we do against Indy after a performance like last night? So my opinion first, and then I'll let Tom talk for a little, because I'll put mine very succinctly. I thought last night's game was as close to a playoff intensity game. Like the level of physicality that the refs were allowing, the way that they called the game, the way it was more difficult to make shots, where it was a defense first, offense second kind of a game, was a great win for the Lakers, because that's the kind of game you're going to need to figure out how to win in the playoffs. For the Lakers, likely on the road. So if you can do that now, if you have, you can build confidence.
We won that game because of our three-point shooting.
I mean, there's a lot of reasons.
I mean, we only had 5-point advantage in free throws, 25 to 20. We lost the points in the paint by 12 points.
Well, that's because we turned the ball over 21 times. That's the thing that
gave us 27 points.
That will doom. That will doom the Lakers in any series if they turn the ball over like that.
Now, one of the strengths of this team during the offensive explosion that they turned into a juggernaut is they really cut down on the turnovers dramatically, and so I thought that was really out of, you know, it's kind of funny. It was almost like it was reflective of having that extra day's rest there that we aren't used to, Kevin, getting 3 days between games. So I'm not as worried about the turnover problems. I think that we've really dramatically improved that. I'm impressed with the defense. I'm impressed with how Dinwiddie has looked. He has really been playing excellent one-on-one man defense.
Yeah.
And AD's it was great to see AD finally catch up with the guards on their team, especially I see him block a couple of those shots at the end. Maxie is so quick to the. I tell you, man, if there's a guy in the draft named with the first name Tyrese, I might draft him. Between these two Tyreses that we've got are two of the fastest guards that I've ever seen. When they go to the hoop, you really have to be quick to block that shot, because you have only a second just to get that shot up the way that Maxie puts that ball up so fast.
Sorry, my kid just started playing in her room. Well, she's asking to do some fun stuff, so we'll probably get this going here in a minute. Real quick, cool bro. I'm just gonna say that I don't watch Homelander. Darth Vader's gonna pretty much kill anybody, but you know, maybe his son. But those are honestly what you should do. If that's the question you want to propose, you gotta go watch Gerald's Pop Culture Cosmos. Post the question to Gerald. Say, hey, I'd like to talk about some versus battles here with you. And that is the forum for these type of debates. This is a Lakerholics spotlight. So we're talking about the Lakers because that's what we do, basically, other than talk about our lives. So I'm thinking we win in Indy and start the road trip off right, because we're going on the road now, right? The road trip begins, I believe, in Indiana. Because the Grammys are next Sunday, if that's the case. I can't remember. I don't really pay attention to the Grammys. I know we're in award season. They've had the Oscars. The Golden Globes are coming up. I think it's the Grammys weekend. So for that, what's your prediction on the Grammy road trip?
Hold on a second. I'm just looking now at the schedule.
Oh, okay. Then we'll see. Well, Tom.
So we got the Pacers. We play the Pacers game is at home, and then we go on the road for the Bucks on Tuesday, the Grizzlies on Wednesday, the Pacers on Friday, the Nets on Sunday, and then we go into the next month, April. That's the end of March, and the Raptors and the Wizards. Those are the games. I think we'll go 4-2.
I would like for us to go 4-2. I don't know that I want to predict that. I feel like there's a letdown game in there somewhere. And I feel like LeBron has a hard time with travel like this now. I think that the ankle does not respond well to flying. I think that's when he runs into issues with his recovery after games. And so I kind of expect LeBron to sit out a couple of games on the road trip, to be honest.
I think that's possible, but because I think we both sort of agree that we're not going to go unless something changes. There's nothing really to be gained by going 5-1 or versus 3-3.
You don't want to be playing LeBron and AD 48 minutes a game.
You want them to be as well rested and in sync as playing well.
Yeah,
going into it.
Yeah,
but you know, there's something about. I've watched what happens on these Grammy trips in the past. Okay. And it seems like there's two different types of things. There's the one type of trip that you laid out where little injuries just happen to derail everything, you know, in a bad game here and there. You blow a big lead, you know, or you choke a game in the fourth quarter. And then the other one is that, hey, man, everybody's been at home for so long. And now the team gets to bond together out on the road, you know, And you know, all of a sudden, all of the distractions that you have playing at home are completely gone, and the team really can consolidate and can pull together, and it can bring them closer together. And a lot of times, the kind of run that they make going down the stretch and into the playoffs is often determined by what kind of Grammy trip they had.
I kind of agree with that.
Bring together Grammy trips that makes everybody closer and tighter. Or was it one of those things that just, you know, well, man, God, I'm glad to get home again.
Yeah. I would hope that it's the first one. That would be the best for the Lakers. My issue the issue I see being most prevalent is that it's going to come down to Darvin Ham continuing to coach like he wants to stay the coach. He's pushing the right buttons again. We haven't seen him do that much this season. Last season,
I'm saying that Dinwiddie is going to save the situation.
I hope so. If you read when I read that article about how long it took,
because Dinwiddie's the guy he's going to put in instead of Prince. You watch.
I'm not so sure about that. I would love that.
He had Prince on the best offensive player in the other team all the time. Now it's going to be Dinwiddie. You watch and see.
I don't know about the best offensive player. He'll guard the players he can guard.
Dinwiddie does well against bigger guys and very few.
He's got a solid base. He's a big dude. He's hard to move off his base, unlike Reeves. That's a positive. And whatever they're doing on defense is working at least one quarter a game. There's one quarter a game, I feel like, where we hold the other team.
The thing I watched was the scram switches. You know, the switches where somebody makes a switch and you got a big guy and you immediately want to pass him off to another big and pick up a small guy. And the scram switching, I thought, was just terrific in this game. It was one of the reasons our defense was so good, was because we didn't get guys every time they made a switch and got somebody on a bigger guy, and the guy who was not with the ball ended up in a mismatch. We saw another switch happen simultaneously. And that's the type of thing that at this point in the season you have to be able to do defensively, so that you can anticipate where the ball's going to go and where the next shot is going to come from. So I was pretty impressed with how that was, not only with Dinwiddie's defense, but with the coordination of everybody making the switches properly and getting people matched up against better matchups for them and eliminating those matchups where we knew that we were just going to give up a point.
Yeah, well, and that's kind of the issue, is that it's just one of those things where I don't know. I mean, we're seeing Dinwiddie perform well against teams that are struggling. I'm just going to leave it at that. He's performed well against Golden State. He's performed well against the 76ers without Embiid. So all of that that's what you need to do in this time of the year to keep gaining ground. I don't know that I would rely on that. I don't know how Book's doing after that ankle injury. I think they probably rushed him back because they're falling out of the playoffs.
Nobody's saying that he's Drew Holiday, but
no,
compared to the rest of the Laker guards, he is by far.
That is a very different comparison. I can agree with. All right, so you're saying 4-2 on the road trip. I'm going to say 3-3. I think we play 500 ball on the road trip, but we win out at home the rest of the season. I think we're going to take care of home court the rest of the season, which means we'll finish the season 8-4.
Which would put us where? What do we got now?
Say it again.
Where are we now? What's our record now?
I think we're 6 games over .500, 7 games over .500. So we're I don't know what our exact record is.
Okay, so we're 38-32. So if we go 8 more, that'd be 46 and
46-36. I think that sounds to me about right.
Yeah, that could work.
I think that's about
I think some of those games will become meaningful at the end and we won't even try. You know, so I think that we're going to do better in the next six games.
If you're in a statistical tie with Sacramento for 7, Mm-hmm. And that means you get an extra day of rest for LeBron. You're going to go all out for that game.
Yeah, but chances are the other team's not going to care, and we're not going to care, and the game's not going to care. So that's what happened last year.
Last year we got set in stone. We were solidly set at six.
But we're pretty solidly set at nine now.
We could still fall out mathematically. So I'm not worried about
falling out.
Hey man, if Houston doesn't lose for the rest of the season, it's going to make things very uncomfortable.
Well, that's the Warriors' worry. That's not our worry.
They're only a game behind us. That's one whole game, and I think we play Houston one more
time. Come on, Jamie. We know we don't have 10 trap games left, man.
Every game is a trap game, Tom.
No, it's not.
Every game is a trap game, Tom.
No, it's not.
That's a trap.
Every game is just one more game. It's just one game. Just one game. Just one game.
Don't ever say that again. You're never allowed to say that again. That's
just one game.
You're grounded, Laker Tom. I'm putting you out in the woodshed for the weekend. All right. I'm gonna go entertain a 6-year old.
Okay.
I hope everybody has a wonderful weekend. Let's go Lakers tomorrow night.
Yep.
Thank you, Laker Fast Break chat room for showing up and doing all the great stuff. Oh wait, we got. Hi, Joro. By Joro, I mean Joe Soro. There he is. Hey, Joe. Hope the nightcap was good. What's going on there? I am Jamie Sweet for Gerald Glassford. Like and subscribe, Lakers Fast Break, wherever you get your pop culture, cosmos. No. Wherever you get your podcast. Nah, I can't do the Gerald thing. He's got it so well rehearsed. I'm nowhere near the same level. Oh man, Cool Bro's really going after people with this. Who wins with Darth Vader stuff? Isn't there like an app you can use to like have Darth Vader fight like a bunch of zombies or whatever? Anyway, that's
Three
another thing.
Problem.
I'm sure you can do anything these days with the right white browser. So anyway, for Laker Tom, I'm Jamie Sweet. Please like and subscribe us right under Tom over there. If I can make my hand do what I want it to do. There we go. And stay safe. Don't do anything I wouldn't do, which really doesn't illuminate many things. Really just don't run over people with steamrollers, I think is pretty much where I top out. So, and if you have a steamroller, I don't know if you can get away with it. Anyway, have a great weekend, everybody.
Yeah, make somebody's day good.
There you go. That's the right. That's even better. That's a great way to end it.
Okay. See you later, Jamie. Thanks, guys.
Bye. We're signaling the ref for a quick timeout, but we'll be back with more of the Lakers Fast Break podcast. Hey, Lakers fans. Looking for the best place to go for up-to-date news, information, original videos, articles, podcasts, opinion pieces, and discussions about the Los Angeles Lakers? Well, look no further than LakerHolics.com. With a legion of followers always there talking about everything Lakers and the NBA, there's no better place to go to share your fandom as the team heads toward another championship run. So stop by and be part of the conversation today at LakerHolics.com. And we're back with another episode of the Lakers Fast Break podcast. Got the NBA jam going. That's right there for you. It's Gerald Glassford coming right back at you here from Lakers Fast Break, Pop Culture Cosmos, where we cover the latest news and trends in pop culture each and every week, twice a week, wherever you get your podcast. Plus also as well, of course, Inside Sports Fantasy Football. We just dropped a new episode this week talking about free agency. Chris Sardieri and I go over the winners and losers of free agency and how it will affect your fantasy football team this fall. So go ahead and check it out today. Inside Sports Fantasy Football. Pop Culture Cosmos, like I mentioned, Melinda and I just dropped another episode as well, also releasing to radio stations worldwide, where we cover Ghostbusters, Frozen Empire. We also talk about all the great things that's going on in the world of entertainment. So please go ahead and check it out today, wherever you get your podcasts. Also, as well, Joe Soro, you know he's hanging around somewhere. Go ahead and check him out today at LakersBall.com. It's Oxide247, his company, Simblades. Of course, the Lakerholics crew, Laker Tom and Jamie Sweet, they were here earlier today. If you've not seen that video yet, after I'm on with Moise, go ahead and check out the video from earlier today with the Lakerholics. And of course, Laker Tom has his strong views on the Lakers, as always. So go ahead and check it out, the guys from Lakerholics.com. Our good friends, John Costa from Lakers Corner and Clutch Talk, Lakers in 5, Empire Jeff TV, Daniel Berry Sports Highlights, yo, John McCalin. Go ahead and support all those great channels, plus this channel as well, by liking, following, and subscribing. I know you're on YouTube, and you hear all of us YouTubers say the same thing over and over and over and over, but we look at the stats. We know who's not subscribed yet. We know who is subscribed. We know who's not liking the videos. We do know who's liking the videos. It helps a lot to all those algorithms and Googleisms and YouTubeisms and whatever isms you want to go ahead and say, because if you like, follow, and subscribe, even for those out there on Facebook, please follow us if you can to get the latest notifications on when we go live on the air with the latest Lakers Fast Break podcast. So we thought we'd throw in an extra episode of Lakers Weekend because this man, my guest today, returns to us. He said, Gerald, with the Pacers coming up tomorrow, we got to talk Lakers and Pacers. And I said, you know what? I've got some time, so let's do it. It is a good man indeed. You got to go ahead and check him out today on 8points9seconds.com. It is Moise Azfar. And Moise, welcome back to the show, my friend. He's rocking the NBA Jam shirt.
Yes, sir.
Absolutely.
Yes, sir. Three-peat, third time I'm on here.
Yeah, let's absolutely go. Always great to have you on as many times as you want, my friend. It
for
is
sure.
Your specialty, obviously, is the Indiana Pacers, in which we've talked about now for, you know, on the other two occasions you've been on the show. But I want to ask you this. The season for both teams has not gone, I think, in the direction fully that both teams have wanted it to go to since they met up in Vegas for the IST, the in-season tournament. Yes, the Lakers won. That's great. It was an extra game. Boy, I will say this, though. The Lakers, as we're trying to get Moise back here real quick. Moise, are you still with us?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, but your video's... Oh, there you go. All right. Switching the cameras right there for you. Yes, so
there you go.
The IST, again, the Lakers and the Pacers. Since then, the season hasn't gone quite up to what both Indiana and the Lakers have expected. They're still in the playoff chase. They're still in the playoff play-in mix, as it were. But the seasons for both teams has not gone exactly the way they planned coming out of Vegas.
Right. I mean, for the Pacers, I mean, at the time we were, say, overachieving because Vegas wanted us, Vegas had us at around 39 wins and missing the playoffs if just squeaking in. But expectations change. Of course, we no longer have a lot of the guys that we had at that time of the first in-season tournament game. We don't have Bruce Brown anymore. We don't have Buddy Hield anymore. We don't have Jordan Nwora anymore because we added Pascal Siakam. And that trade essentially, it essentially skewed expectations in a higher direction because you can't expect to go, you know, 40 and 42 anymore when you have two all-stars on your team, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
What I wanted to say is absolutely the Pascal Siakam trade has benefited as far as the look of your team, but the style of play, you guys were a high-octane offense heading into that IST game. Coming out of it, obviously that was still a big part of what you guys were all about, but the league itself has changed. The officiating has changed. In January, there was a memo sent out by Adam Silver in regards to the referees deciding that they wanted to go ahead and change the way they referee games, obviously leading to a reduction in the way that points are scored. And it's led to that. It's not as exactly as offensively
energized as it once was earlier this season, whether or not it's an attractive game, as attractive game. I'll leave that up to each individual. But your thoughts on how this has affected the Pacers, because the slowdown in play, my friend, since the start of the calendar year has probably affected the Pacers more than any other team.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just about to say, and of course we are still the best offense in the league, leading the league in points per game. I believe before the new year, in the 31 games before the new year, we averaged around 126, 127 a game. And then since the new year, since that one Milwaukee game, we've been at around 120 a game. So definitely has gone down a little bit. You know, that's what happens when they start to crack down on the fouls. I believe if you're talking about the fouls and the style of play, I believe that first Pacers-Lakers game, that in-season tournament game, had like a record for fouls or free throws or something. It was kind of annoying how they wouldn't let either team play on.
True, but it led to a higher scoring output. I know that also as well, even though it was one of the most exciting games of the season, I know that the league may have not have been happy with the Golden State Warriors and the Lakers when they went into a nationally televised game in overtime with a 145-144 victory for the Lakers. Again, it was a very exciting game, but still, I know the NBA was not pleased with it heading into that offensive direction. So I think they did a correction. I'm not sure I liked it, but it is what it is. And the Lakers and also the rest of the NBA, the scoring has gone down, but the team that it might affect the most, like I said, as you said, 6 points difference. It's a huge difference in the style of the Indiana Pacers, but also Tyrese Halliburton, who you just put an article out on,
yes, sir,
was injured right around that time, around the calendar year. So,
exactly.
Yeah. So with that said and done, Tyrese Halliburton, his injury also played a part in the fact that I think it caused a lot of the early year struggles, as far as the early calendar year struggles for the Indiana Pacers.
Yeah, no, of course. I mean, if I'm looking at stats here, in the 35 games before his injury, we were averaging around 126, 127 a game. And you were right. It basically a bang on correlation with the changing of the rule, with the changing of the Adam Silver changing the style of play and his injury. We're up to around 119, which is around 7 or 8 points down, which, I mean, hey, Tyrese is the engine of our offense. He is the beacon of our offense. And if you have your best player, not only your best player, but the leader of a still historically efficient offense, that's going to matter. It doesn't matter what rules change, what rules don't. If Tyrese Halliburton is either not on the court or not producing at the level that he usually is, it's going to hurt you.
Absolutely. Absolutely it is. Once again, it is Muiz Azfar. Please go ahead and check out the great work that he's doing, including his latest article he dropped earlier today on 8points9seconds.com. Tyrese Halliburton is the subject of his latest article, so hopefully you get a chance. But the thing is now, Tyrese Halliburton, as you stated, he is on the way back to getting to where he needs to be. His shot still hasn't come around fully. I mean, that's obviously one of the last things to take place. But if it does, and he can get back to where he once was with Pascal Siakam and the rest of the Indiana Pacers, how far do you think they can go in this year's playoffs?
All right, well, with the Tyrese thing, it's funny because the entire first half of the season, me and a lot of other Pacers fan sentiment was like, okay, our offense is incredible, historic, one of the best of all time, because at that time it was, statistically. Mm-hmm. But the defense was awful. I think we were by far and away the best offense in the league, but defensively we were like top three worst. And I think our defense is also historically awful. When the Pascal trade happened, that was when Tyrese was still out. He got injured on the 8th. That trade happened on the 17th. And at that time, it was like, okay, let's get Tyrese back to full form. And we got Pascal. Pascal is, in my opinion, one of the most consistent players in the league. Like, even the guy's bad games, he affects the game in ways other than scoring. He can shoot 4 for 12 and still give you good defense and rebounding, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So my thing was, all right, Pascal's here. He's going to carry us through the lulls of not having Tyrese, because last season when Tyrese wasn't playing, it was pretty ugly. It was pretty ugly. We went on a big losing streak. I think we went like 2-9 at one point. It was ugly. But with Pascal there, I think we improved to, I think, around the 6 or 7 games we played without Tyrese after that. If I can check real quick, I believe we went around, let me check here. It was the Sacramento game and he came back in the Boston game. We went 4-3. We went 4-3 in the game since the trade and Tyrese's return against Boston. And of course he did return in that Portland game, played very well, in fact, but I think myself and a lot of Pacers fans knew that it wasn't going to last, because hamstring injuries, they're pretty hard to come back from. And with him only sitting out 11 days since that initial injury, coming back, it was a miracle he played as well as he did. But when the news came out that he was going to have to miss the next three to five games, it wasn't really a big hit for me and a lot of Pacers fans, because we knew that coming back from a hamstring injury is tough already, but coming back in less than 2 weeks, that's even tougher. And if we wanted, and of course, you know, the 65 game requirement for the all NBA teams, of course you've heard that. That's one of the big things keeping him playing, because let's face it, $50 million is generational money. That's that'll set you up for life. And I don't blame the guy for wanting to earn that. And he's made a pretty good case for himself as all NBA.
Absolutely. And they did get a good victory last night against the Golden State Warriors. Appreciate Indiana beating the Golden State Warriors to help give some better distance for the Lakers on that.
Funny you mentioned that. I appreciate you guys for beating the Sixers. That put us a game and a half above in the sixth seed. Thank you.
Well, no worries. Thank you in kind. I know my good friend Alfred Esmond, who's also been on the show, covers the Orlando Magic, is also excited to see where they're, playing at a level above what many thought as well. So it's good to see Indiana and Orlando near the top of the standings. But I think for Indiana, the focus, I know for you as a writer and fan of the Indiana Pacers and the Indiana Pacers at large, I know the focus is staying as far away, as much away as you can from Boston in the playoffs. So
there you go.
I'm assuming six right now where they're at is probably a desired place where they want to be, because again, if they don't have to meet, or if it lines up where they don't have to meet Boston until a possible Eastern Conference matchup, as far as in the finals, Eastern Conference finals, that would be the most desired amount, because again, Boston has just been laying waste to everyone in the East.
Yes, exactly. I was just about to say that. I don't want us to fall in the play-in, because if we lose one of those play-in games, it's either miss the playoffs or get swept by Boston. Even though we went 2-3 against Boston, which is respectable. I mean, I think we have like around the best record, one of the best records against Boston this season at 2-3, but this team's going to turn it up in the playoffs. I already know. For as good as they are right now, they're going to turn it up in the playoffs. And I think there are like maybe two teams in the league that can stop them. Neither of which are the Pacers. So, yeah, if we, as far away from Boston as we can stay is ideal. Right now we're at 6, and if the playoffs started today, we'd face Cleveland, which I don't hate our chances. We beat them 2 times earlier in the season. We did lose to them shorthanded about a week ago, but I think around when the playoffs come, this team is going to realize they can't start playing down to competition. Not saying that we're better than Cleveland, but I'm saying that we match up pretty well against them.
Against Boston?
Against Cleveland.
Against Cleveland, okay. Because I was going to say,
not against Boston.
Yeah, that's going to be a hard deal against anybody unless they have some type of injuries on the Eastern side of things. Boston has looked strong. Cleveland obviously has had its problems injury-wise all season long, but yet has maintained a good spot in the NBA standings as far as in the Eastern Conference is concerned. Milwaukee is starting to distance themselves as far as in second place. That's a team, though, that has had its struggles from time to time. If it should be where Indiana meets up with Milwaukee, do you guys feel that you have a substantial chance of beating a Giannis Damian Lillard-led team in the playoffs?
That's tough because in the playoffs, Giannis is Giannis and Dame is Dame. I mean, those guys are going to get theirs regardless. And they have improved under Doc Rivers, surprisingly. But the thing is, it's the mental advantage. It's the mental advantage. We have a 4-1 record over them. And we, I think in those January games, the first and the third, before Tyrese got injured, we destroyed them. Beat them by, I think, both games. We beat them by double digits. After that game ball fiasco that I'm sure you remember, after that, it was basically we smelled blood in the water. And Tyrese even said he wanted to smoke after those games. So I think if we face the Bucks in the playoffs, I think we're going to take it longer than people expect. I think a lot of casual fans, a lot of people expect the Lakers to lose in, say, 4 or 5. I think we could take that to 6 or 7 because we destroyed them in those two games, and that was without Pascal Siakam. Now we have Siakam on there, a guy who can guard wing players like Middleton, can help slow down, not stop, but slow down Giannis. I think at this point, we're starting to match up well with essentially every team except for the Celtics. I'll say that again.
Once again, it is Muiz Asfar. Please go ahead and check out all the great work that he's doing today at 8 points, 9 seconds, right there for you. He has a ton of articles on the Indiana Pacers. So if you want to become more familiar with them before the game tomorrow night and what they've been doing all season, please go ahead and check it out today at 8points9seconds.com. Muiz, again, the Lakers tomorrow against the Indiana Pacers. It's something, again, both teams still needing the victories, still needing to keep where they're at in the standings, because I don't think, again, with 12 games left, the Lakers are going to be anywhere other than ninth place. Possibility they could slide down to 10th, but having them climb up over Sacramento, who has the tiebreaker, I think is a very tall ask at this point in time, especially with the Lakers having a big road trip on the horizon. So I'm assuming the odds are saying that if the Lakers just even go 500 or a little bit above, that they will probably maintain the ninth position in the Western Conference. With that said, though, I mean, when it comes right down to it, everything is probably going to have to go through Boston in the East and Denver in the West. Those teams have been outstanding. Denver just seems like at times it's been on cruise control. They're just worried about their health. I think it gets more, it's this point where you have the current champions playing through the season, already knowing how good they are, just trying to maintain health in order to go ahead and be able to finish the season strong. When it has Boston is a team that knows they're talented, but doesn't know how far it can go because they've never been able to get the job done all the way. So it's very interesting to see if any of these teams, like an Indiana, a Milwaukee, or in the West, like a Lakers or whoever in the Western Conference, can try and sneak by one of these teams. But as of now, do you see anyone at this point upending a impending Nuggets-Boston matchup in the finals?
Now, I told you a second ago that there are two teams who I think can beat the Celtics in the playoffs. One of them is Denver. The other is New York. I think because New York has that defense. Yes, that stifling defense. And if you look at the stats, the Boston Celtics, I believe, in losses only have, I believe, the second worst offensive rating in losses. The worst offensive rating in losses is the Washington Wizards. And the second worst is the Boston Celtics. If New York can use that defensive pressure and get, say, Tatum, Brown, those guys out of their rhythm, I think they have a puncher's chance. Milwaukee, I think Damon Giannis thing, that's a talent thing. They could very well do it. But I think if you get a motivated New York Knicks team in the playoffs, because Brunson is a playoff riser, you have a bunch of guys, great defenders, Anunoby, Mitchell Robinson will be back. You know, I think if I'm going to bet on any team beating the Celtics before the finals, it's going to be the Knicks or the Bucks, outside chance.
That's good. That's a tall order for the Knicks. I mean, again, right, with the Celtics, they are so reliant on the 3 points as far as the 3-point shot, because they shoot it so well, so efficiently. But they've got a secret weapon in Porzingis. If they decide to go to post up Porzingis, that can pose problems for a team like the Knicks or a team like Cleveland. I think Milwaukee still, if they're healthy, and Middleton is the key for me, matches up well, or it's healthy, they match up well with Boston. I really think that Milwaukee is the only team I think in the East. I think with New York, they just don't have enough along the perimeter, or especially at the forward position. And especially if they have Julius Randle back. Because if Julius Randle, I love him, great guy, played for the Lakers, you know, but his game it's tough to watch.
Inconsistent.
It's tough to watch. It's absolutely, it's so ISO driven. It's so ISO heavy.
Bully ball.
Yeah, it's a lot of bully ball. He has to be on point. He has to be at a top tier in order for that to work in a playoff series. But again, I think that Milwaukee has the best chance of beating the Boston Celtics in the East. Who do you think in the West might have a chance to pull off an upset on the Denver Nuggets?
Nobody. I don't think OKC, because they're too young. I think they're too young. And if they have a full negative to the team starting in Josh Giddey, who does not fit them, he does not fit their offense in any way, with SGA being more of a playmaker, can't defend, can't shoot. If they have him starting, they don't have a chance. And Minnesota, I like Minnesota, but depends on Towns. And maybe if Towns can come back in time for the playoffs and is at, you know, the Towns that we know, the Karl Anthony Towns we know, there's a chance they could beat them. But I think at this point, it's Denver against the rest of the West.
Once again, it is Muiz Asfar. Please go ahead and check out his work today at 8points9seconds.com. Did you look up Glenn Rice on Google? Glenn Rice was a part of a winning world championship team for the Los Angeles Lakers. Come on, Louie.
Come on, man.
Come on, Louie.
Even I know Glenn Rice.
Yeah, come on. Give it up, man. And then he said, did you look up Eddie Jones as well? Come on.
Come on. That's Tyrese's cousin. Of course I know him.
Yeah, come on, guys. Come on. Come on, Louie. Come on. Give it up. Go. Just enjoy. Watch. Don't be a hater. We like having you on the show. We like having you in the chat, the best Lakers chat room that's out there, Lakers Fast Break. But come on. Come on. Come on. Let it go. Let it go. Enjoy. Learn to understand that we know the NBA. We follow the NBA on a regular basis here at the Lakers Fast Break. And all right. Our great guests, all our great shows, all our great performers, all our great hosts and panelists, we do follow the NBA. So, yes, we are familiar with all the names that you're throwing out there. But when it comes right down to it, Moise, it is the Lakers and Indiana tomorrow. It is a key game, a pivotal game, because the Lakers, even though they are heading back east for their last road trip of the year, I don't take anything for granted, because A, the Lakers have absolutely sucked on the road. Let's just kid. It's just not beat around.
You know their record on the road?
Our record on the road. Have you taken a look at it compared to the rest?
Have not.
Yes, it's not pretty. It's 12 and 20, okay. My friend. They're the only team under 500 in the Western Conference. That's in the playoff mix. If you want to include, if you want to include Houston, that would be two. But right now, in the top 10 teams, they are by far the worst road team. So the Lakers have a chance to go ahead before they head out on the road to get a win against Indiana. Indiana, it's been on the road trip, catching them maybe at a time where they're a little bit fatigued. But still, I expect a good matchup. I also expect Indiana to have a long memory of what happened in the ISD. To your knowledge, as far as any of the words that have been spoken, how much has the loss in the IST affected Indiana, or have they spoken about it at length in post-game interviews on how forward they're looking to maybe a rematch against the Los Angeles Lakers?
I'll say this. Tyrese, after the IST game, he was pretty heated, saying that, you know, the season's over, that people were saying the season's over, the Pacers suck. He was cursing in his post-game interview, saying people aren't graduating, you know, it's not over. So I think he's definitely going to have a chip on his shoulder. And it's especially great that we've got two good games in a row out of Tyrese after one of his worst games of the season against Cleveland. We got a good game against Detroit, and then a good game against an actually competitive team in Golden State. So, and on the bright side, 4 of 8 from three against Golden State, including 2 heaves. So if we get that confidence back, if Tyrese can get that confidence back, play like he's been playing before the injury, you know, bring that connection to Siakam back that they had earlier. You know, of course, Pascal had 25 and 16 in that last game against Golden State. He's been, of course, one of the most consistent players in the league, like I've said. I think Tyrese is going to be the key, man, because this guy is going to take us as far as we want to go, and he's going to give us the worst losses that we can get, as we've seen in the season.
So I ask you this. You have a definitive 1-2 on your team, like the Lakers do. For us, D'Angelo Russell has stepped up with his since the turn of the calendar year. Since he was brought back from the bench and put back in the starting lineup, he has shot tremendously. Now he's well above 40% from three-point area. He has now been established as, I guess, the best thing that's number three. Does he play crappy defense? Absolutely. He can't play defense. But he has been a sharpshooter from the outside. That's exactly what we need. So he's played at a level consistent with what we're looking for as a decent number three option. I would like better, but right now it's what it is. When it comes to Indiana in the playoffs, you obviously have Halliburton needing to shoot efficiently. I think that's something because he will be double teamed. He will be a focus. I think trapped. That Siakam, yeah, he'll be trapped. I think Siakam, that any team out there is going to let him go to town. They're going to say, if Siakam, you can beat us by all means, because they don't fear Siakam at this stage of his career. They fear Halliburton. I think that's the one player that you know, on Indiana that you really look at the most. But who is that number three guy that steps up for you guys? Because I know it's not definitive, but who is the next person that has to step up in a playoff matchup? I'm not saying against the Celtics. It's not fair to assess that. But against anyone else in the playoffs, in a playoff matchup, who is that next guy that has to step up for the Indiana Pacers?
If you were asking me this question a couple weeks ago, I would have told you Benedict Mathurin, because I think Benedict Mathurin's game is best suited for the playoffs, the way he can slow it down, the way he can get a bucket by himself. I think he's one of three guys on the team who we give the ball to and we say, okay, go get yours.
But like he is out for the season, correct, with his injury? For the season,
that's correct. Without Mathurin, it's going to have to be Miles Turner. And Miles Turner is going to, of course, in the headlines, broke the Pacers franchise record for blocks yesterday. Turner is going to have to, really come into his own. Of course, hasn't played playoff basketball until since 2020. And then it was a quick 4-game sweep against the Miami Heat in the bubble. But Turner, I think, is going to have to basically shake some of his non-aggressiveness off and play in the paint as much as he can, because when he is in the paint, when he is motivated, when he wants to back down, you know, hit that jump hook, hit that post fade, he's pretty good. And of course, pick and fade to the 3-point line, there are a few big men who can shoot that open shot better. And I do see that you'll be missing heel shooting. I do agree. But here's the thing though. First of all, that man didn't want to be here. We weren't going to re-sign him. Might as well get something for him. Here's the thing. We got shooters. We got Tyrese. Pascal's shooting 38-39% since the trade. We got Miles, who can shoot it. We got Ben Shepherd, who's been coming into his own. We got Obi Toppin, one of the most efficient players in the league. You know, the shooting is starting to come back. I know we've been in a slump the past few games. But hey, I mean, if there's one thing the Pacers are short on, it's not shooters. I'll tell you that.
Well, the thing is, though, you don't have a definitive number three. You talk about Miles Turner. Miles Turner has been an enigma for the Indiana Pacers because, you know, you signed him to big contracts. You signed him to that big extension. I think you guys were expecting something more when it comes to Miles Turner. And you get it every now and then. I mean, we talk about Anthony Davis here on the show a lot about how he plays well against, like, for instance, last night, played outstanding, you know, 20 something points, 19 rebounds, you know, just video game numbers. But that's against Mo Bamba and the Philadelphia 76ers. But when it comes right down to it, he has not stepped up against Sabonis, not stepped up against Jokic the way we need him to do so. So even he is inconsistent. But when Miles Turner is a player on the Eastern Conference without the plethora of big men, talented big men, it's just surprising how you don't get consistent effort, how you don't get consistent production at a high level from him. It seems like it's a missed opportunity. It seems like it'll be a missed opportunity once his career and time is done in Indiana.
Now, see, I do agree with some of what you said. I think Turner, his good games are make you think, oh, this guy's going to be an all-star. This guy's going to be, just wait for him to be unleashed.
I agree with you on that.
Yeah, but then his bad games, like that one he had against the Lakers in the IST, where he was getting thrown around by Anthony Davis, basically getting put in a torture chamber, you're like, is this guy really who people say he is? Is he really the top premier defender, shot blocker, three-point specialist that people think he is? I think with Turner, he's going to have to step it up in the playoffs, because I think him and Aaron Nesmith are our two X factors. If those two aren't on our game, when the second unit comes in, and Miles usually stays in with the Patriots second unit, when the other team's second unit comes in, it's going to be up to Turner to be that leading scorer, because Mathurin is out for the season. Like I said, we don't have a guy who can create his own shot anymore. Miles Turner is the closest to that, but he's going to have to step it up in the playoffs if we want a chance at beating a Cleveland, if we want a chance at beating a Milwaukee or anything like that.
You mentioned Aaron Nesmith, and he's the one player I wanted to make sure we talk about before we head on out. And the reason why I say that's because he was once considered a failed draft choice
bust,
from Boston.
A bust.
Yeah, to say the least. Well, we have a bust this year in Jalen Hood-Schifino, but need I digress on that, from Indiana, no less. So.
Yeah.
That's been terrible. And now he's gone for the season. So, yeah, that's unfortunately all water in the bed at this point. But when it comes right down to it, Aaron Nesmith was once thought of in that same realm as Jalen Hood-Schifino is now. But he has resurrected his career. He's found a place on a team that has been able to utilize his talents. And not only as a stretch wing, but somebody who can guard a decent amount of players in this league. Tell us about the growth of Aaron Nesmith and how much of a pleasure it's been to watch him grow and excel with the Indiana Pacers.
Man, I can't tell you how happy I am for the guy, because when he was drafted out of Vanderbilt in 2020, I thought, okay, this guy's pretty good, but he went to the worst possible position. He went to a contender. He went to Boston. They weren't going to develop him. And I'm looking at his stats over here in Boston. He averaged 4 points, 41% from the field, 32% from three. That wasn't going to last, because they didn't need him. They didn't need Aaron Nesmith. They had Tatum. They had Brown. They picked up Pritchard. They had a bunch of guys who were ahead of Nesmith in the rotation. And Nesmith, if he stayed in Boston, he probably would have been out of the league by now. Probably would have been in the G League. Probably would have been overseas or something. But he got that opportunity. And I remember people were laughing. A lot of Celtics fans were laughing when we traded him for Brogdon. When that Brogdon trade happened, I'm sure you remember, it was in 2022. When that Brogdon trade happened, people said that we got him for, I don't know if you saw this, the Bleacher Report tweet, where it was what the Celtics got for, what the Celtics got for Malcolm Brogdon. And it was a paperclip and a piece of tissue. You know, Nesmith apparently saved that in his files, because he'd been on a mission since he came to Indiana. His last season was pretty good, 42% from the field, 36 from three, 10 points a game. This season, he's taken it to another level, 50% from the field, fifth best three-point shooter in the league at 44%, 12 points a game. He has been our most consistent defender before Pascal got here. And with Pascal here, he doesn't have to guard the big wings of other teams. He doesn't have to, because remember, we were putting him on LeBron in the IST game.
Yes,
he spent a lot of minutes on LeBron. He spent a lot of minutes on Giannis. He spent a lot of minutes on Pascal when we played Toronto that one game. Now we got a guy, 6'9", big sturdy dude, who can actually guard the other team's best wing player. And I wish we implemented that more in recent games, because I've seen games where Nembhard, Andrew Nembhard, has to guard the other team's best big wing. And my thought is Nesmith is right there. Put him on him, because I've seen games where Siakam. Because I've seen games where Pascal uses wingspan, uses length, and takes the other team's best scoring wing out of the game, essentially. I don't think he'll be able to do that with a LeBron James, because you can't do much to stop that guy. But you put him on, say we somehow face New York, you put him on a Julius Randle, you've got something.
Well, we'll see if they do have something coming up here as far as the playoffs are concerned. As long as they, I think that as they stay in sixth place, or, well, because if they go to 4-5, then they will face Boston in the second round. So as long as you try to avoid Boston as long as you can, I think you might be a decent run and people might be in for a surprise for Indiana. Oh, yeah. You never know. But again, the tempo has to be high. If the tempo isn't high, as it has a tendency not to do in the playoffs, that might be a little bit tougher for Indiana, but we'll see. But before we end and out, it's the cheap plug time for you, because Buiz, I want you to go ahead and give the hard pitch to everyone out there why they need to go ahead and check out your work at 8 Points, 9 Seconds.
You know what? I got just the thing. I'll be back.
Okay. All right. Oh, watch out. He's going to go ahead and show us why 8 Points.
Remember last time I showed the Miles Turner, the signed hat before, as we went off the air. There you go.
All right. Has signed Halliburton. There you go.
Signed in person.
All right. In person. Congratulations.
Yes, sir. You can check out my work, 8 Points, 9 Seconds. You can check out my YouTube, Camitron PTW, Kamitron PTW. Same as my Twitter. Same as my YouTube. That's about it, man. Thank you for having me, and I hope it's a great game.
I hope it's a great game, too. Looking forward to it. It is tomorrow. It is the Lakers and Indiana Pacers. I'll be here to make sure the game it goes right as far as the simulcast is concerned. Playback.tv/LakersFastBreak. Also, as well, YouTube and Facebook on the simulcast. You know the post game is the best in town for the Los Angeles Lakers right here at the Lakers Fast Break. And, of course, Joe Soro will be topping off your evening with his nightcap, the Lakers nightcap with Joe Soro. So for Muiz Asfar, it's Gerald Glassford. Thanks again for watching and listening. Sovereign, big shout out to you, Kurt, Louis, even though you were a little harsh on us today, we still got nothing but love for you, my friend. Everybody that stopped on by, David, thank you so much. Appreciate you stopping by. Please like and subscribe, everyone, before you head on out so you can get the latest notifications on when we come back right here this Lakers weekend on the Lakers Fast Break Podcast.